Part 1. Unity. Chapter 1. One Empire Under God. Between 312 and 330, Constantine imposes his will on the Roman Empire and gives the Christian Church a hand with its doctrine. On the morning of October 29th, 312, the Roman soldier, Constantine, walked through the gates of Rome at the front of his army. He was 40 years old, and for 6 years he had been struggling to claim the crown of the Imperator. Less than 24 hours before, he had finally beaten the sitting Emperor of Rome, 29-year-old Maxentius, at the Battle of the Milvian Bridge. Constantine's men had fought their way forward across the bridge, toward the city of Rome, until the defenders broke and ran. Maxentius drowned, pulled down into the mud of the riverbed by the weight of his armor. The Christian historian Lactantius tells us that Constantine's men marched into Rome with the sign of Christ marked on each shield. The Roman writer Zosimus adds that they also carried Maxentius' waterlogged head on the tip of a spear. Constantine had dredged the body up and decapitated it. Author's note: histories of the later Roman Empire usually identify its citizens as either Christian or pagan, with pagan generally meaning not Christian. There are two problems with this approach. First, the religious landscape of the early Middle Ages was far more complicated than this simple division implies. Second, the label pagan has been resurrected in recent years with an entirely different set of associations. I have chosen to avoid the word altogether. Zosimus, often called a pagan historian, was a follower of the old Roman religion, so I have called him Roman instead. Constantine settled into the imperial palace to take stock of his new empire. Dealing at once with Maxentius's supporters, he ordered immediate but judicious executions. Only Maxentius's nearest friends fell victim to the new regime. He dissolved the Praetorian Guard, the standing imperial bodyguard that had supported Maxentius's claim to the throne. He also packaged Maxentius's head and shipped it south to North Africa as a message to the young man's supporters that it was time to switch allegiances. Then he turned to deal with his co-emperors. His victory over Maxentius had given him a crown, but not the entire empire. 30 years earlier, his predecessor, Diocletian, had appointed co-rulers to share the job of running the vast Roman territories, a system that had spawned multiple lines of succession. Two other men currently held parts of the empire. Licinius, a peasant who had risen through the army ranks, had claimed the title of imperator over the central part of the empire, east of the province Pannonia and west of the Black Sea. Maximinus Dia, who had also clawed his way up from peasant birth, ruled the eastern territories, which were constantly threatened by the aggressive Persian Empire. Author's note: this included the administrative districts of Pannonia, Dacia, Thracia, and Macedonia. Diocletian, an idealist, had designed his system to keep power out of the hands of any one man, but he had not reckoned with the drive to power. Constantine had no intention of sharing his rule. Nevertheless, he was too smart to open two wars simultaneously. Instead, he made a deal with Licinius, who was not only closer than Maximinus, but also less powerful. Licinius would become his ally. In return, Licinius, now nearing 60, would marry Constantine's half-sister, the 18-year-old Constantia. Licinius accepted the deal with alacrity. In his first gesture of good faith towards his brother-in-law-to-be, he met Maximinus Dia in battle on April 30th, 313, 6 months after Constantine entered Rome. Licinius had fewer than 30,000 men, while Dia had assembled 70,000. But Licinius's army, like Constantine's, marched under the banner of the Christian God. It was a useful rallying point. Maximinus Dia had vowed in Jupiter's name to stamp out Christianity in his domains, and the presence of the Christian banner pointed out that the battle for territory had become a holy war. The armies met on the poorly named Campus Serenus, outside the city of Adrianople, and Licinius's smaller army outfought Maximinus's. Maximinus Dia fled in disguise, but Licinius followed him across the province of Asia and finally trapped him in the city of Tarsus. Seeing no escape, Maximinus Dia swallowed poison. Unfortunately, he indulged in a huge last meal first, which delayed the poison's action. The historian Lactantius writes that he took 4 days to die. The force of the poison repelled